Welcome to today's discovery on the basic conditions required for healing, having established that the body is designed to heal itself. And I'm going to begin with Romans chapter 12, and I think it's a very important point that everyone memorize this, and you might already know it. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God. And we know that when the Israelites sacrificed a lamb, it had to be the best. They couldn't sacrifice the sickly or the poorly lamb. It had to be the best of the crop, so to speak. And that's what God wants from us, is our best. You know, the beautiful old hymn, give off the best to the master. Make him first place in your heart. And that brings us to the second part of the two verses, chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service, very reasonable. It's not an unreasonable request, is it? Because we're the ones that prosper when we live in a body that works, but not only us, everyone who's around us. And that brings us to the second verse. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. Who are you proving it to? You're proving it to everyone that you have contact with. Daily contact, hourly contact, 6-monthly contact. That's who you're proving it to. But you're proving it to yourself. And we also looked at 1 Thessalonians 5:21, prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. People say to me, do you ever step sideways, Barbara? I say, why would I? I feel so good and I love what this does for me. They say to me, how do you eat when you're traveling? Well, you can always buy a banana and an apple and an orange and a packet of nuts in the airport. And often I just don't eat much at all because that doesn't hurt, because I know I'll eat again soon. This eating is underestimated. Did you know that? When you're hungry, you don't have to eat. I was starving the day I came here. I only had 2 bananas in the morning. I didn't know what was going to happen through the day. And so I had a 2-hour trip. Well, couldn't I just eat something then? But then I can't eat my dinner when I come here. Because as we'll see when we go on our journey through the gut, which is a fascinating journey, it takes probably 3.5 to 4 hours to digest food. And then our stomach needs a 1-hour wet rest. So what did I do? I just drank lots of water, lots of water, lots of water. I'm used to eating at 7 and we're eating at 8:30 here. So by 8:30, this stomach is screaming at me. You know what I say to it? Settle down, it's coming. Settle down and have another big glass of water. You don't have to eat. If you notice, you don't die if you don't eat. Just drink more water. Just drink more water. But what I want to talk to you today, I want to talk to you about your project manager. Proverbs 14 verse 6 says, knowledge is easy to him that understands. And I want to discuss your project manager, because your project manager, it's in charge of the job site. The job site being this amazing body that we live in. And if the project manager goes down, the job site doesn't work very well. Did you know that your liver is the largest internal organ? Did you know that your liver is the only organ that has the ability to regrow? Yes. And as we go through this, you can see why God made it so. Cancer cannot get a hold on the body if the liver's working at optimum performance. So when the Bible says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your liver a living sacrifice. When you give your liver the right conditions, it will function very well. And so understanding the liver, understanding what it does and what we can do to strengthen the liver is pivotal in understanding the conditions to give the body. So let's have a look at the liver, the largest internal organ of the body. And I call the liver the project manager because everything that comes into the liver, into the body, goes first to the liver. And everything that comes out of the body comes out under the jurisdiction of the liver. And do you remember when we looked at yesterday, page 127 of the Ministry of Healing, where she said in case of sickness, the cause should be ascertained. So that's why we look at history. Yeah. What do we look at as well? Symptoms. And what's the last thing we're observing?
Response.
Is that right? Response. That's right. Response. And so with the liver, it's of the utmost importance to understand the history. If someone's had hepatitis, that'll be a factor. If someone's been a drug addict, that'll be a factor. If someone's been a alcoholic, that'll be a factor. Because the liver is like the sieve. And every poisonous things that comes into the body, it goes first to the liver. So when page 127 says, in case of sickness, the cause should be ascertained, unhealthful conditions changed, wrong habits corrected, then, do you remember the next bit? Nature is to be assisted in her efforts to expel impurities and re-establish right conditions in the body. That's the liver. Everything that comes out of the body comes under this jurisdiction of the liver. And when environmental poisons come into our body and come into the liver says, it's not too bad. I think we can break it down and get it out. Oh, this is a nasty guy. Wrap it up in fat and store it. So it's stored in the fat cells. We had a guy do our program who was a Vietnam veteran. And you know, in the Vietnam War, that's when chemical warfare really took off, isn't it? And so a lot of the soldiers that worked or fought in the Vietnam War or worked in the Vietnam War, they've got a high level of toxicity in their body. And this man was a little overweight, and he told me that his doctor said, don't lose weight. Why did the doctor say that? Because he's got a lot of the poisons stored in his fat. And if he starts to lose weight, and we'll see that process in a minute, then those environmental poisons are going to be released. Praise be to God that the liver is an amazing organ and it's been designed to deal with that. And I'm going to show you how it does. But what I want to look at first of all is what it does with the food that comes into our body. And I find today, and there's a lot of writers who are talking about this, there's a lot of, some of them fairly extreme diets that have been set up because of this very fact, is that most people today eat too many carbohydrates. So what we're going to look at is we're going to do a carbohydrate assessment. And we're going to start with breakfast. So what would most people in the world, no matter where I go, I find it, what would most people eat for breakfast? And we know there's a whole aisle devoted to it.
Cereal.
Coffee.
And if you notice, we'll look at coffee tomorrow. If you will notice that, well, you may not be a television watcher, I'm really not, but occasionally I might watch a documentary or something. And if it's on a television station that has ads, have you ever watched the ads? Huge amount of ads to cereal. And so the little children, when they're watching television, my children didn't watch television, then the mother takes them shopping and they see the cereal that they saw on the television. I want that cereal. We can't have that. Wah! Throwing themselves on the ground. You know what I always say to parents? The first tantrum is never in the supermarket. It's at home. And you've got to deal with it at home. If you deal with it at home, then quite possibly it won't be quite happening in the supermarket. We had a guest at the retreat last week. She said, this is what I'd say to my 3 children. We get to the door of the supermarket and she'd turn around and she said, if you ever. And they went. She'd have no trouble. But one of the reasons people have trouble is because the little children are watching the ads. Oh, yes, first step. Don't let them watch television. Don't have the television. But you have a look at the amount of ads on the television to cereal. There's one in Australia. I guess it's everywhere. I guess it's here. It's Nutri-Grain. And on the front of the packet, there's a, you know, Muscle Man, and the ads usually have Muscle Man. You know, it's one of the worst. It's brown, so people think wholemeal, but there's a huge amount of sugar in it. And I don't know, you have it here, we have brands like Cocoa Pops, Fruit Loops. Whoa, you may as well eat a bowl of lollies as the amount of sugar that's in that. And some people will eat bread. I know when I was in Germany, people said to me, be careful how you talk about bread. Germans love their bread. I said, I'll be careful how I talk about it. But people eat a lot of bread, isn't that true? And because these articles of food give quick highs and corresponding lows, mid-morning they're looking for cakes, biscuits, is that donuts, etc. We'll just say cakes, etc. And some other fast foods that the Europeans have certainly introduced to Australians is pasta. I'm a 5th generation Scottish descent, so I was a child in the 50s, 60s. I never heard of pasta. Never heard of it. Being Scottish descent, what did we eat? We had sausages or chops, mashed potatoes, frozen peas or beans every night of the week, except for Sunday. Then Mum would do the roast lamb. And all my relatives ate like that. And all the little Presbyterian church I went to, they ate like that. Everyone I knew ate like that. Because you probably know that, I don't know whether it was about the 50s or 40s, that you could get to Australia from England for £10. So a lot of people took that offer and came out. So a lot of people in Australia come from Scottish or Irish or English descent. And, of course, that has greatly influenced our food. People say, what's Australia's traditional food? I said, Australia, it's a combination of a whole lot of different cultures, but it's mostly the UK influence. And the Europeans have also introduced Aussies to pizza, another high carbohydrate food, rice, and can't forget potatoes. These are all high carbohydrate foods, and last and certainly least in nutritive value is the pure crystallized acid that's extracted from the sugarcane plant. Now, would you agree with me that the average person is eating a lot of that?
Yes.
A lot of that. All of these foods break down in the gastrointestinal tract to glucose. And when we go on our journey through the gut, we'll be looking at that process in detail. Let's go to the CBD and watch what happens. So here's our cell, the central business district of the human body. The glucose comes out of the gut and into the blood and goes on the M1 main highway straight to project manager. And then the project manager determines where that glucose goes. And the first place it will go is to the cell. Now, that's no surprise, is it? So the glucose comes into the cell. Students, can you tell me what hormone is necessary to get it into the cell?
Insulin.
It's insulin. That's right. So insulin, and we'll look at that in a little bit more detail, that process tomorrow. So the glucose comes into the cell. When it gets into the cell, it goes through a 20-step pathway. This is the glycolytic pathway. It's a pathway that uses no oxygen, so it's your anaerobic pathway. I was referring to it a little bit yesterday, and that's when I said I'll go into detail today. That 20-step pathway delivers to us 2 units of energy. The end result of the 20-step pathway is a chemical form of glucose called pyruvate. Pyruvate is the chemical form of glucose. It gets fed into what's commonly called the powerhouse of the cell. It's the Krebs cycle, which is sitting in the mitochondria. And this is an 8-step pathway. And this pathway is an aerobic pathway, meaning this is the pathway that uses oxygen. And that pathway delivers 36 units of energy. What a difference. We've got 100 trillion cells in our body. And so we've got 1 trillion in our brain. How's your brain going to be when you've got enough oxygen going in to give you that sort of energy? Whew. That's why we have a break every hour. And that's why I encouraged everyone to go outside and breathe very deeply and get that oxygen in. Even run around the house 3 times. So that your brain cells are going to be delivering that sort of energy. Tomorrow we're going to look in detail at oxygen. But today we're looking at glucose. Only so much glucose can be fed through those energy cycles. And so what the liver does now, it stores some as little molecules of glucose. And these little molecules of glucose are called glycogen. And glycogen is a name given to quick-release glucose stores. And that's how you had energy this morning to walk. So when you start walking up that hill and breathing deeply, the body's crying out to fuel, for fuel. And God in his wisdom and mercy put these glycogen stores mostly in our muscle cells. And so when your body's crying out for fuel, it'll pluck the molecule through the energy cycle. Pluck the molecule of glucose through the energy cycle. What an amazing process. On a high carbohydrate diet, we've still got glucose left over. And so now, the liver will cause it to be stored in the most amazing fuel depot in the body. It's called fat. You see, the body can only store so much glycogen. And when glycogen is in the muscle cell, it can only be used by the muscle cell. It's almost like it's in a prison. But the liver can store some glycogen. And that glycogen that the liver stores, it can go all over the body. It's not locked in to the cell like it is in the muscle cell. Athletes that work out hard, the more they work out, the more little energy cycles are made in the cell. I've drawn this as if there's one per cell. Especially in the athlete, you might get hundreds per cell. And we have 100 trillion cells in the body. Whoa, that sort of maths is a little bit beyond me. But I think we can understand. That's a lot, isn't it? That's a huge amount, yes?
Would you say then that the process of storing the glucose is aerobic? It requires oxygen because of the exercise version.
Well, it's just stored as glucose. But when it's plucked and used, yes, because you're right, I get what you mean. Because of your exercise, it'll shoot right down, straight down to the aerobic. Mm-hmm. Have you heard the old saying, you will receive more energy than you expend on your morning walk? Have you ever been tired and don't want to walk, but you do? How do you feel when you get back? You're a little revived, yeah. Tomorrow, when we look at oxygen, we'll also be discussing chronic fatigue. Because if you ask a chronic fatigue person, do they exercise, what's the answer? No. Oh, you don't understand. I've got no energy. Well, guess how you get it? But we'll look at that tomorrow. And what's happening to most people in the world today? What's happening? They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Is that right? And bigger. Now, what I've just shown you here is the basic science. And can you see by what I've shown you that fat doesn't make you fat? What makes you fat? It's this high carbohydrate diet. Now, the person who first blew the whistle on this was, that we know, is Dr. Atkins, yeah? But Gary Taube, he wrote a very interesting book where he went back way to the mid-1800s to see if it was acknowledged then, the danger of the high carbohydrate. And he gives the story of a man named William Banting. This is mid-1800s. And he went to a very famous doctor called Claude Bernard. Claude Bernard was a contemporary at the time of Pasteur and Antoine Bouchamp. And Claude Bernard believed as Antoine Bouchamp did in the cycle of life, pleomorphism, many forms. He didn't go along with Pasteur. Many scientists didn't because they recognized he only gave part of the equation. And so William Banting went to Claude Bernard because he wanted to lose weight. He was a little overweight. So Claude Bernard stopped. Now, they were called starches back then. We more call them carbohydrates today, don't we? So Claude Bernard got William Banting to stop the carbohydrates. So what did he eat? He had a lot of vegetables. And he ate meat. And in eating the meat, he was also eating lots of fat. Meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs, all of that. That's the diet that Claude Bernard put William Banting on. The weight just fell off him. Why? Well, if you're not giving this quick-release glucose, your liver can convert your fat stores to glucose and your liver can convert protein and fat to glucose. So it had lots of energy and the liver's quickly breaking up these to give the glucose required. Was he hungry? No. Three things keep the food in the stomach longer. Fiber, because it slowly releases the glucose. Protein, because it's in the stomach that protein's broken down. And fat, because it lightly coats the food, so it takes a little bit longer to break down. And that's perfectly fine. Because as you will see, we should be leaving 5 to 6 hours between the meals. Let the stomach do its work. Sometimes I talk to my husband at the end of the day. I'm talking at the end of the day now, because it's the end of the day in Australia right now. And he'll say, I had a 2-hour job to do today, but I had so many interruptions. I had phone calls, I had people coming to the office. And that 2-hour job took 8 hours. Do you know that's what happens with digestion? If you put a meal in and then put something else in a bit later. But we'll look at that when we look at the gut in more detail. Most weight loss diets are a rice cake for breakfast and half a grapefruit and some no-fat cheese. And then lunch is 2 rice cakes with a no-fat cheese and a slice of tomato and lettuce. And how's that person by the third day? They just said, get out of my way, I'm just going to eat. Did you know that the hunger is the strongest urge in the human body? And we know some very tragic stories, especially when the army surrounded Jerusalem, of people eating their own children. See, that's an... And you know what we think to ourselves? I would never do that. But that just indicates that the strongest urge in the human body is the hunger. So the best weight loss diet, you know what it does? Prevents hunger. So these diets are ridiculous. They're creating hunger. And the person goes out and just eats whatever they want because all reason is gone because they're so hungry. And then they put all the weight on and more that they just lost in the last 2 days. So Claude Bernard was a savvy guy, and he knew his science. So he put William Banting on this diet. William Banting was so happy because the weight was falling off, he had energy, he was never hungry. So he wrote a paper called The Banting Diet. He's a savvy businessman. He sent it out there. Today we'd say it goes viral, yeah? And it got to the point where people had looked at each other and saying, "Are you on a diet?" "Yes." "What diet are you on?" "I'm doing the Bant. I'm doing the Bant."
In Sweden, I think it's the expression you say, banta.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so... Okay.
So, yeah. That's the noun. Bantning is the noun.
Okay. So isn't it interesting that maybe it came from... So, Bernard's French, so I guess European. Yeah. And I found that fascinating because basically that's exactly what Dr. Atkins found. I don't know if he ever knew about Claude Bernard and William Banting. And Robert Atkins' book was one of the most fascinating books I've read. I had no interest in reading that book because I'm a plant-based person. All you hear is you've got to eat meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. So I'm not interested. But we had a guest come to us. And he said, "You're not going to like this, but I go very well on the Atkins diet. I go off the Atkins diet and I go down." Now, what does every health professional who's worth anything, what do? They listen. And I've got to listen to that. Because that's his story and it's real. So I've got to listen to that. So for the first time, and this happened 18 years ago, I sort of made a bit of an Atkins vegetarian diet for him. But I'm thinking to myself, where is it? Why? Why does that man go so well on the Atkins diet? It intrigued me. And then I stayed at a friend's house. I was travelling, stayed at a friend's house, and they had a fold-down bed in the office. And I woke up in the morning, and I'm an avid reader. I love reading. And there's the bookshelf. And I'm just, scaling the books. And then one book almost jumped out at me, Dr. Atkins' New Revolutionary Diet. And I said to myself, "Father in heaven, are you trying to tell me something?" So I picked up the book and I read it and I couldn't put it down. The science was fascinating and it explained so much to me. So I went out that day and bought my own copy of Dr. Atkins' New Revolutionary Diet. Years later, when I was in New York giving lectures, Dr. Carl Benjamin came to see me. I said, "What are you seeing me for?" He said, "You are the first nutritionist that hasn't slammed Atkins." He said, "I was one of Atkins' patients." So this is back in the 80s. So this happened to me 15 years ago, and this man was in his late 70s then. He said, "I was diabetic." He said, "I had excess weight, so I went to Atkins because I'd tried everything else." And he said, "Atkins took me off the carbohydrates." And he said, Atkins was a gracious man. He was terribly apologetic. He said, "Look, I want you to eat a little bit of meat." He said, "I was desperate, so I did." He said, "The weight just fell off me." He said, "My diabetes went." But he said, "I'm coming to see you because I'm getting arthritis. And I know it's the meat, the high acid." He said, can you please show me what to do?" And I did. Now, Dr. Atkins, he first did it just for weight loss, and it says this in his book, but his results were amazing. So he started to put all his patients on it. The results were amazing. It is estimated 11 million people have been helped by his diet. Now, before you protest, please let me finish my illustration. Phew. His book was number one on the New York Times best-selling book list 4 years running. He deserves some attention. And at the time, I started giving meetings called Dr. Atkin's Missing Link. What was Dr. Atkin's missing link? The danger of the meat and dairy and what vegetarian protein can do. But what Dr. Atkins found, and the only reason he started to research this is because of the results he was getting. The response he was getting was phenomenal. Now, everyone was happy. They could eat everything they can't eat on a weight loss diet. But it was the response that he was looking at. And what he found is that these are the three essential food groups. Got that? Why? Why are they essential? Yesterday we had a look at how important fiber is to the colon. Is that right? It sweeps the colon and it stimulates peristalsis through the colon. And if you don't empty the rubbish bin every day, the house starts to smell. Is that right? We'll look at that when we look at the gut. So fiber's essential. When I was a little girl, my mother would peel every vegetable, wrap it up in newspaper, and I'd run out and put it in the bin. But we don't do that anymore, do we? We just scrub them. And what they've discovered is just under the skin of the potato is the highest concentration of the nutrients in the potato. So we need that fiber. Why is protein an essential nutrient? Yesterday we looked at the DNA, we looked at the crossword bands, they're made up of amino acids, which just comes from the protein we eat. And also, remember the new cell being built, built out of amino acids? My son James has inherited my body type. Poor guy. Boys don't want to be little. Well, he's taller than me, but very hard to put on weight. I can show you a photo of him now. How did he do that? He changed his body type. He had to change his body type to do it. He worked out hard. And he supplemented with extra protein. Yeah?
How many grams do you recommend for a grown man?
Well, the recommended daily allowance for a lady like me is about 65 grams of protein a day. And when I did my nutrition course, I had to write down exactly what I ate every meal for a whole week, and then I had to analyze how much protein, how much fat, how much. But you know, I learned a lot from that. And I average about 80 grams of protein a day. But you know what?
0.75 grams per kilo.
But do you know that I work... I function so well on that, and I'm 49 kilos. So can you see what the bottom line is? Your body's response. I ate a lot more carbs when I was breastfeeding or pregnant, which was for 14 years non-stop. So let's go back to why this is essential. 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is protein. Now that's pretty important, isn't it? Do you know what this information means? I've just given you the science. We cannot function without adequate protein. We cannot heal without adequate protein. Can you see that? My son James says, Mum, bodybuilding.com says exactly the same thing as what you're presenting. Fiber, protein and fat. Is fat essential? It is. Why? 50% of the membrane around every cell in the body is fat. Whether you're 45 kilos or 105 kilos, we're talking about the membrane around the cell, except for the brain cell. It's 70% fat. One of the most dangerous things about the fat-free diet is what it does to the brain. Now, in another lecture, I call it fantastic fats. I'm going to define fats. But basically right now it's fats as they come from the hand of the Creator. And there's two fats that have been used for thousands and thousands of years that can be made easily in the kitchen because they're extracted from the flesh of the plant. What oils are extracted from the flesh of the plant? Coconut and olive.
Yeah.
The only reason the Bible doesn't talk about coconut oil is because there's no coconuts growing where the Bible was written. But it certainly talks a lot about olive oil. So Atkins discovered that these are the three essential. He discovered that the non-essential food group is carbohydrates. That's a shocker, isn't it? There's a documentary series in Australia. They used to be called Catalyst. And they've done some excellent documentaries. They did a whole series on the microbes in the gut. Then they did another series called Fat or Fiction. And they had an athlete there. And this athlete just didn't have the edge. This athlete had a little bit of spare weight. So a nutrition, and he's a professor of nutrition, he put him on this diet. Got the carbs right down, fiber, protein and fat. And within a couple of months, he'd lost all his spare weight and his performance went high. And this professor of nutrition said, you can live very well without one dot of carbohydrate. I'm not suggesting we live without carbohydrates. I'm giving these examples right over there as a response to this high carbohydrate diet to bring us back here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. So the non-essential food group, the carbohydrates, that's your negotiating part of the meal. And the negotiations change depending on your age, depending on your size, depending on your weight, your height, depending on your physical, mental output through the day. That's the negotiating one. So if someone wanted to conquer their cancer, what would they drastically drop? The carbs. Do you remember how much more glucose the cancer cell consumes? 15 times. Dr. Holland in the book, The Germ That Causes Cancer, he said when you deprive cancer cells of glucose, they self-destruct. Because cancer cells are running up here. Remember, they hate oxygen? And this is a very fast pathway, whereas this pathway is a lot slower. So when you deprive cancer cells of glucose, they self-destruct. And then the student might say, but Barbara, every cell needs glucose. It does. But this is a slower pathway, and it can wait to get the glucose from the vegetables, from the legumes. Mm-hmm. So if someone wanted to lose weight quickly, what would they drastically drop? Carbs. Trick question. If someone wanted to put on weight, what would they increase? Most people that want to put on weight don't want to put on fat. What do they want to put on? Muscle. Do you know what Atkins found? You can be on quite a drastic weight loss program, but if you're having adequate protein, you will never lose your muscle. Yeah?
I was reading in a book about in the 1900s, the beginning of the 1900s, there were several nutritionists and others doing studies, and one was doing a study in America on soldiers and sportsmen, that they only needed 50 grams of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wrong math.
And what it can also be, and I'm going to show you right now, there's a huge difference as far as the East is from the West, vegetable protein and animal protein.
Right, yeah, it's probably.
So there's a huge difference there. You know the China study,
yes,
where they found that the meat and the animal products were just feeding cancer. They could switch cancer on and off by the amount of meat and vegetable protein they were giving. 5% animal protein didn't trigger cancer growth. Well, when I say trigger, he'd injected every single rat with aflatoxin, and aflatoxin causes liver cancer. But what he did was he got half the rats and gave them 20% animal protein, and half the rats 5% animal protein. 5% animal protein didn't start that cancer growth, even though they'd been injected with aflatoxin, whereas the 20% animal protein, it did. But he found that 20% vegetable protein did not trigger the cancer, did not feed that cancer. So a huge difference between animal and vegetable protein, as I will show you now. But before I show you, so if someone wanted to conquer their diabetes, what would they drastically drop?
Carbs.
The carbs, that's right. You see, the carbs give a quick high, then a quick low, whereas fiber, protein and fat, it gives this lasting energy. You see that? So this is important information for you to have for next week when you start to make your programs. In fact, you might even start to make them now. For diabetes, a program for cancer, a program for weight loss, yeah?
We knew a person, a Christian man, and he had brain cancer, which was very aggressive. And if they ate this carbohydrates low diet, and he was operated last August, and then he ate it, and the cancer came back. And I told him, don't eat so much food, meat, but he died now. I'm so sad about it.
So what did he start eating again?
He began eating the traditional Danish food.
Okay, yeah. And this is what Colin Campbell said. He could switch the cancer on and off. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. By the food he was giving them. Yeah?
When you talk about the 20% animal protein, what does it refer to?
Okay, that's a good question. 20% animal protein, that's just about meat and or meat or dairy, 3 meals a day. Whereas a 5% animal protein, it might be, you know, just half a cup of feta cheese a day. Or, you know, it came right down, or a very small amount of meat. Yeah?
The reaction or the process of the carbohydrates, the glucose and glycogen, does it vary if it's completely white carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. I'm saying carbohydrates. Is there a difference between wholemeal, whole, and refined? Absolutely. The white carbohydrates can almost be just put with a sugar. But I also have met people who are overdoing the wholemeal carbohydrate. What would be overdoing it? It would just be having carbs every meal. And we looked yesterday at what's happening to the wheat. How many of these things are wheat? Wheat, 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 wheat. So that brings in another problem. But how can you do this on a plant-based diet? Let's have a look at it. And we're going to go to Genesis 1:29, where God's telling Adam and Eve what to eat. And we're going to have a look at the food. We're going to have a look at the protein content. And we're going to have a look at the carbohydrate content. So every herb-bearing seed, what's a herb-bearing seed? A herb-bearing seed is a grain. A herb-bearing seed is a legume. A herb-bearing seed is a seed. So let's define this. Grain. Wheat, rye, barley, oats, amaranth, buckwheat, quinoa, millet, so many grains. And grains are high in protein, but they are also very high in carbohydrates. And how many from our carbohydrate list are from grain? Grain, 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 the majority. Yeah. What about a legume? That's your chickpeas, lima beans, black-eyed beans, cannelloni beans, lentils. We have so many. You can get about 5 different types of lentils now. So many legumes. Legumes are high in protein and medium to low in carbohydrate. The fact is, and you can get this information, I just got it from the Nutrition Almanac, which lists the protein, the carbohydrate, the fat content of every single food. Legumes are approximately a third the carbohydrate that you will find in the grain. Seed. Pumpkin seed, sesame seed, sunflower seed, chia seed, flax seed, or linseed. They're high in protein, but they are quite low in carbohydrate. So God said, "Behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree. In the which of the trees a fruit-bearing seed?" What's a fruit-bearing seed? That's your nut. So your nuts come from the fruit of a tree. And we have so many nuts. We've got macadamia, we've got cashew, we've got almond, Brazil, hazelnut, walnut, pecan, so many nuts. Nuts are high in protein and they are quite low in carbohydrate. And remember, your peanut is not a nut, it's a legume. We talked about that yesterday. So to ensure that you're getting your three essentials and to ensure you don't overdo your non-essential, my suggestion is to increase the legume, nut, seed part of your meal and decrease the grain part of the meal. That's an easy way to do it. Carbohydrates are not bad. I have to tell you that because some have told me that Barbara says carbohydrates are bad. They're not bad. It's only when they're overdone and refined. Yeah? It's only when they're overdone and refined that a problem arises. Yes?
You almost then say that they're good if they're not overdone and refined. Or would you not
go far? Yeah. The quinoa, great. Millet's great. But it's all about a balance, yes?
And I guess also, as we spoke about yesterday, the hybridized forms.
Oh, yes, the hybridized forms bring in another problem, and the insecticides and sprays bring in another problem. Absolutely. Absolutely. So remember, this is your negotiating part of the meal. I eat a lot less carbs now because I'm not breastfeeding or pregnant. I eat a very high fiber diet. I eat generous protein and healthy fats. I'm not drinking a cup of olive oil a day. I limit my nuts to about 8 per meal, maybe 8 to 10 per meal. You can overdo the nuts, absolutely. They're very concentrated food. I eat very liberally of legumes. And I do that because it just sits so well with me. My weight just stays the same. I have lots of energy. I sleep very well. What does the Bible say? In 1 Thessalonians 5:21, prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. If you have a yeast problem, if you have excess weight you want to lose, if you have any form of cancer, drastically drop the carbs, and it's not forever. It's just until you conquer your problem. Michael and I don't have any cereal at breakfast, cooked, because Michael had a very severe yeast problem. When I married Michael, he was 40, and he had terrible case of thrush in his toes, in his private areas. And when I looked at the history, I certainly saw the symptoms. I would wake at night with him scratching. And I looked at the history when he was, I think he was about 30, he wanted to have his wisdom tooth out. They were paining. Our jaws aren't as big as God meant them to be, so many people have to have the wisdom teeth removed. He did it on the cheap. He went to a hospital, got some students to do it. They knocked him out and pulled him out. But when they wide open his jaw, they broke his jaw. And he said that his face got bigger and bigger, and he could go to the sink, push his cheeks, and the pus would just fall out. And he contacted a mate and said, "Get me out of here." And the mate walked straight past him, because my husband's tall and skinny and he wasn't used to Michael having a face like this. And he took Michael home, and the little old lady next door was watching, and she said to him, "I'm taking him to the doctor, you're dying." And so she took him to the doctor, who put him on very strong antibiotics, which probably saved his life. But here we are, 10 years later, And he's got these terrible thrush problems. Because he loved honey and cereals for breakfast and lots of fruit. He didn't realize he was just feeding it. Even though it was all healthy. Thrush is a fungal outgrowth between the toes, and it can also be between the legs. Where does mold like to grow in your house? In the dark, moist areas. It does it in the body too, in the dark, moist areas. And so I put him on a fairly strict diet. I got the glucoses right down, and the tea tree oil on the toes, and we certainly got it under control, but now and then it would rise up again. So I said, okay, I want to put you on a very strict diet. I want to knock this. And he's a very good husband. Anything I tell him to do, he will do. He's even exercising in my absence now. I'm impressed. Took 3 years of me exercising before he joined me, but he does it now because he proved it for himself. So I put him on what we call the sledgehammer diet, which is basically the cancer-conquering diet. No fruit at all, no sweet at all. He just had vegetables, lots of vegetables, legumes every meal. He loves avocado. He can have lots of avocado. He was on it for 6 weeks. At first he grumbled a little bit, but after a few days he started to enjoy it. And when the 6 weeks were up, he said, can I keep eating like this? Mm-hmm. I said, sure. So we are 10 years later now, and every morning I cook him a little skillet of vegetables, onion, carrot, broccoli and cauliflower. And while that's cooking, I'm rinsing my legumes that have been slowly cooking while I run up and down hills. I just put some simple flavourings in. All I do for breakfast is put oil, salt, Italian herbs, and it's beautiful. And so for breakfast, I have fruit. He has veggies. We both have a slice of the sourdough Emma toast, avocado and red lentils, or avocado and brown lentils, or avocado and black-eyed beans. We have that for breakfast every morning. And I hear him telling people, my health has never been better. I never wake up to scratching in the night anymore. We conquered it. Does he eat fruit? Yes, he does, but not much. In fact, most days he'll have a little, but he's very proud. He rings me up and says, I made my breakfast this morning. I had a cob of corn and I had a whole plate of vegetables and I've taught him how to cook red lentils. Because he can cook toast very well, but that's about it. But I've taught him how to cook the red lentils. And that's his breakfast. Now, we have breakfast with the guests sometimes and they'll have a fruit salad and a rice cooked in a cashew milk, and he'll eat that and enjoy it. But I think that if he had that high sweet again, it wouldn't be surprised if it would start murmuring again. Mm-hmm. We're not in heaven yet. Everyone I know is managing something. And if you can manage it, praise God. Medicine has taught us, got a problem, go to doctor, take drug, symptoms go away, cured. No. Drug stops, oops, it all comes back, even worse. If you can manage it, you're doing very well. So it's important to give that message to your health guests. We can help you to manage this. We can help the symptoms to be kept under control.
I have a question about this. We have a friend from church. He eats a lot of fiber, protein and fat, but he doesn't eat any vegetables, legumes,
yeah.
And because it's carbohydrates in them. But that must be a...
Yeah, see, our vegetables are your highest source of your minerals.
Yeah.
And your minerals are just so important. I was at a health retreat recently and the master of the house heard this, and the next meal he sat down to a big plate of salad and vegetables and the legumes, and his wife said, we've been trying to get him to eat that for 10 years. And he smiled. He said, I'm going to eat it now because I've just heard why. I've just heard why. We're about to have a break, but I'll just give you one more story. I had a guy who was just huge. He was about 180 kilo. I said, have you ever gone on a diet? He said, yes, I went on the Atkins diet. I said, did you lose weight? He said, yes, 17 kilos. I said, why did you stop? He said, oh, my God, I just couldn't handle it. I said, what were you eating? He said, meat, butter, cream, cheese, eggs. I said, what about the vegetables? He said, no. I said, haven't you heard that you're supposed to eat 3 cups of vegetables a day on the Atkins diet? That's the only way it got through. That's the only way he got away with it. I said, did you read the book? He said, yeah. I said, did you read that bit? He said, no, I missed that bit. Important point. And the Dr. Carl Benjamin that I mentioned to you that came to me on how he could do this on a plant-based diet. He said to me, I believe if Dr. Atkins had read the China study, Dr. Atkins would have become a vegetarian. Interesting point.